everybody. Welcome to another episode of... Oh, you can't hear me over the music. It's too loud, isn't it? Welcome to another episode of the Broken Shovel Poet Podcast, Homesteading for a Sustainable Future. My name is Lucas, and I'm joined, as always, by...
Eric!
Hey!
And everyone, Pixel in the background was staring at us at the start.
There. Yes. Date of release for this will be March 26th. All the information on this vague concept we're talking about today will be... up to date as of March 26, 2024. And we are talking today about regenerative agriculture. It's super interesting. We'll get to a definition in a second. Just want to say, if you want to reach out to the show, brokenshovel802@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Eric, how are you? Yeah. Oh yeah. We're in the, that's exciting. So we ended up in the sidebar of the Vermont subreddit.
Yep.
As one of the listed podcasts, a Vermont podcast. And then Eric has started a subreddit for us. What's it called?
Broken Shovel 802.
So just search that on Reddit if you're a Reddit person. They just went public, I think. So I figure some more people are going to be migrating over. They'll advertise and stuff. So, yeah. So how are you doing? We'll talk a bit about this storm we just got, but I think we're both pretty wiped out already.
Yes, very much so. Because I shoveled once yesterday at like 10, 11 o'clock. It was just like, that was probably about the midpoint ish for me in my up here. And yeah. And then I just proceeded to watch another like foot fall on the ground.
I was looking at the snow totals for around the state, and it said for my town 17 inches, and I'm like, I'm looking out the window, I'm like, this is, it went over my tires on my rear tires on my tractor, which are 26 inches.
Well, you also had a lot more wind and drifting action going on.
Actually, not that much drifting in the corners of the house and up against the side of the house and stuff like that, but like on top of the propane tanks is a full 2 feet, you know? So it didn't blow as much. It was like 5 miles an hour. So it wasn't like whipping like it does up here. But
we
then
had a couple
all of a sudden,
like, it was when it was when the storm was dying down, it started getting whippy around here.
Yeah.
But I had about this morning, I measured when I was shoveling and I had exactly 18 inches.
Okay. I'm but pretty confident in a minimum of 2 feet at my homestead. But yeah, let's talk about regenerative agriculture. I'm going to give the sort of definition of it, but I think this article you sent me 5 minutes before we started recording, by the way, you know, I put my notes together midweek and sent them to you. 5 minutes you gave me on with this new information. So I'm going to read sort of my definition that I found, excuse me. And Eric, if that first paragraph of that article, if you could read that when I'm done.
Yep.
Regenerative agriculture is a farming practice that improves soil health, increases biodiversity, and restores ecosystems. It involves practices like minimal plowing, crop rotation, and the use of organic fertilizers. Stuff we talk about all the time, but we're just sort of giving it a name here. And Eric has a much better scope of this with this article he sent.
Yeah, and so the opening pair, and I'm going to post this on the Reddit page. I'm going to start sharing the articles that we're getting information from.
Excellent.
There. So this Gobody, it's like, as a philosophy and approach to the land management, regenerative agriculture asks to think about how all aspects of agriculture are connected through a web, a network of entities who grow, enhance, exchange, distribute, and consume goods and service instead of a linear supply chain. It's about farming and ranching in a style that nourishes people and the earth, with specific practices varying from grower to grower and from region to region. And there is no strict rule book, but the holistic principles behind the dynamic system of regenerative agriculture are meant to restore soil, ecosystem health, address inequality, and leave our land, waters, and climate in better shape for future generations.
Which is, you know, from our initial idea about this episode, that really does take you, you've taken it to another level with 5 minutes of notice with this new information.
And honestly, I found that by just searching regenerative farming practices on
Google. Okay, feels like you're victim blaming now.
I looked this up this morning. That was my quick, like, quick. And I'm like, hey, this article seems good. And then I started reading. I'm like, oh no, this is really good. And then I'm like, wait, I should. And then I went to work outside. And then afterward, I'm like, oh wait, I should probably share this with Lucas.
So let's start with the article I sent you from the AP. Mm-hmm. And so right now there's a study being conducted on the effects of organic farming on conventional farms. Mm-hmm. And it's a brief article. It might as well be a BuzzFeed listicle, but it got me thinking about the whole process and more about
also very much was a very trying to play the both sides argument.
Yeah. Yeah. So the study is suggesting that conventional farms near organic farms are using more pesticides. Researchers believe this is because conventional farmers are trying to avoid pest infestations that move from organic farms. Some organic farmers argue that they are not attracting more pests. So, you know, the article wanted to put forth that the challenge was coexistence. And I don't believe it's coexistence. I think people are using more pesticides because the salesmen are telling them that this is a problem, or going to be a problem. But we're going to talk in summation of this topic. I think we're going to be coming back to this article.
I want to talk about the scientists that studying what was the green leaf clipper, whatever bug.
Yeah. Yes. So let's start. Do you want to just kind of go through my list here of just like what are some of the keys of regenerative ag, and then we'll sort of dig in with your source.
My notes are very similar to yours. Let me get the doc open again here because I have it.
Sure. So and then we'll sort of dig into that what you found from NRDC.
Yep.
And you could probably go through our list of episodes. I think this is our 45th episode, actually, Eric. So we're closing in on a full year. I'd have to weed out bonuses, so it might be 44. I don't know. But yeah, composting. We just talked about this recently. Composting food scraps and yard waste to create nutrient-rich soils and amendments that feed the microbes and help retain moisture. Those are the two main things, but also reduces waste, right? cover cropping, something that Eric is adventuring into this season more so than myself, involves planting crops between cash crops or during fallow periods. Cover crops help suppress weeds, improve soil fertility, and for Eric, prevent erosion.
And then you forgot number four, nitrogen fixing.
Nitrogen fixing. Well, that all depends on the plant, right? But 99% of the time.
I'm doing clover, so.
Yeah, 99% of the time it is nitrogen fixing, which is to say it restores nitrogen to the soil. Easier to grow stuff in the future. Crop rotation. This goes back a millennia or two, but it's the practice of planting different crops in the same field over a sequence of seasons to break pest and disease cycles, improve soil fertility, and contribute to a more balanced ecosystem. I've talked about it recently. We had a really bad bug problem with our squash. We chose to just stop growing squash for a few years, but it's the same idea as crop rotation. We brought in other crops. We increased the amount of like things like marigolds that sort of chase away the bad bugs, and we're hoping it's worked. We're going to find out this season.
Yeah. And I mean, I've always done crop rotation in my garden where I do, like I just, and it's always been like different. I do different shapes. Like I'll do one year where this quarter is where I do all of my pumpkin and squash mounds. And then the rest is different rows. Or this time I'm doing this entire half as mounds and then doing the rest as horizontal rows instead of vertical rows.
Yeah, it's really important to move the products around because there are some plants that are really hard on the soil. Mm-hmm.
Corn is very hard on the soil.
Corn is very hard on the soil. We're moving our entire corn field this year, which isn't by field. I don't mean, you know, what you see in Kevin Costner movies. No-till versus minimum till. Gardening. You and I differ with you till. I do a sort of minimum till where I will loosen the soil and aerate the soil as with a fork as opposed to running the tiller.
Yeah, I'll run the tiller, but I'll run like right through all my cover crops and stuff. I will just till all that right in, and then I also always add more material because I do so much that material, like there's just so much nutrients drawn out because I grow these like on my good years, I grow massive tomato plants that I just like, and they just suck the nutrients out that I'm always having to add more back in to really keep that biome and bacteria and fungi all happy and in cohesion.
Which is kind of what we're talking about in the next bullet point here on this list, which is holistic management, right? So, decision-making process that considers the ecology of the entire farm, including soil, plants, animals, and humans. So, having animals that provide manure, and justifying that and feeding them scraps from the garden or the kitchen table, and closing these loops to reduce your we used to say this a lot more early in the show, but reducing our reliance on a capitalistic structure. It started to feel political saying that, but reducing what we're reliant on outside of our own homes is sort of a holistic management thought process or philosophy. Silvopasture, which integrates trees, forage crops, and grazing animals into a single production system. So the trees provide shade and shelter for the animals, which in turn improve soil quality and help to sequester carbon. So this is really very cool. It's the idea of planting walnut trees or other nut trees and things like that other animals will graze under and eat what falls, but also fertilize the soil. And it's a whole good thing. Here's another one that came from our composting episode, biochar. You talked a bit about this, Eric, I think. Charcoal-like substance that can be added to soil to improve fertility and water retention, which we're just going to keep saying that over and over, increase fertility and water retention. Rotational grazing doesn't really mean a lot for both of us. I mean, my chicken coop is literally going, we're building it on wheels so that we can move it around and have the chickens, easily move from one space to another. But if I had grazing animals like cows, you'd want to move those from one section to another. It's almost like not moving your maple taps, right? Like if your tap is always in the same spot, it's going to heal over and you're no longer going to be getting maple syrup or well, sap. And then my favorite, because it kind of ties into that AP article, integrated pest management. It's a strategy that uses a variety of methods to control pests, such as biological control, cultural practices, and mechanical controls. I don't really use mechanical controls. Integrated pest management helps to reduce reliance on synthetic pesticides, which can harm soil health and biodiversity. It's really was just saying the same thing over and over. These are important things, and by actually thinking about how you are capable of creating a closed system, you can do a lot. My pest management this year is going to focus on the ducks we're raising, placing a number of birdhouses. If you picture the garden as a football field, say, or a soccer pitch, and you put birdhouses all around the outside, but primarily on the corners, those birds are going to crisscross across the garden, taking out bad bugs all day long. They're never going to leave. They're going to stay right there. They're going to lay their eggs. They're going to chirp. They're going to be nice. And they're going to take out the bad bugs all day long. It's great. So,
They eat the berries.
I have so many berries. And we keep, that's another thing. We've talked about this. We keep patches of our property rich in wild berries and grapes and things like that because it keeps the the pests like the deer, the bears, and things like that away. They have plenty of stuff. They don't have to come work for it or fight through a fence or anything like that. They've got what they've always had, and I will never get rid of those. If anything, I'm just encouraging them. So NRDC, what is that organization? I did not look into that
I
because
didn't actually look too much, but
I
they
only
are one
had.
of the big pushers of the whole of the idea of the
Okay.
regenerative gardening. Let me actually go to their homepage.
Yeah, I'm doing that now too. It doesn't really, don't really have an about us, but about NRDC, National Resource Defense Council,
Oh yeah,
works to
they're
safeguard the earth, its people, its plants and animals, and the natural systems on which all life depends. 3 million
These
acres,
guys are pretty big, and they do a lot.
700.
Like you hear about them in the news with their nature and wildlife preservation, working with organizations.
Yeah, they've been working pretty heavily in Flint, Michigan, it looks like. This is, yeah, okay. They are at a glance a reputable source of information. So, regenerative agriculture. Yeah,
So
so
I
5 minutes
found,
of notice.
yeah, 5 minutes of notice. But yeah, I really found that like in the this article, the Regenerative Agriculture 101 really came down to four major tenets of regenerative agriculture. And I mean it really just kind of bundles together everything that Lucas just listed off. Number one is soil, which then feeds down into water quality, which then leads into the ecosystem and stuff like they're actually talking about more farmers moving to a pasture slash open grazing pattern from the getting away from these major facility feedlot type operations. Because those operations are rife with disease, illness, and super viruses and super bugs. And like I said at the I made my notes, I said, "Let my chickens be free."
Yeah, you gotta, and that's one of the reasons I really want to get pigs and goats and stuff is have them out there grazing and kicking up the soil and stuff.
And the article goes into like a little bit about little to no synthetic chemicals. Me and Lucas were both ones that use no synthetic chemicals.
Right. Yeah, which has its trappings, but largely super easy. Go
The
back
next
to
thing,
our composting episode 2 weeks ago, I believe.
composting. Another big tenet of it is that the first article you had that didn't really cover was the community aspect of regenerative gardening. And there's a quote in the in this article that I really liked. It's about more than the yield and the farm size. It's about joy and happiness and the number of families fed, watching land regenerate and flourish, money saved, debt avoided, by repurposing equipment and et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, and that is very much tied to your local community, which in turn reduces your reliance on the supply chain. Local farmers markets, local food in every possible way. It's one of something I say all the time. Yay, local food. Without an ounce of sarcasm. It sounds, I'm tired from the plowing and the shoveling, but it's, yeah, keeping it local. I like that.
And then the last thing is, and this is something that I kind of have at the very bottom, I have a note on this that becomes a very big challenge, but is labor, the labor aspect of farming. And it is regenerative farmers are about paying a fair wage for the help and having their help be give input on how the farm can be both more regenerative and more community driven.
Right.
And then a huge part of it is then, and especially this came from NRDC, and that this is, I talk about this a lot, is social injustice and social inequities. And part of regenerative farming is acknowledging how our entire ag system was built on slave labor of brown and the natives.
You know, in some ways it can be said that it still is.
It still is. And that's where I have my very bottom note. And this is where it becomes, it's a very, very hot issue. And that's undocumented labor. Our agriculture system, even in Vermont, where we have more regenerative farms already, there is a huge amount of undocumented labor that these farms rely on and depend on to be cost viable.
There was a bit of a scandal maybe last year, the year before. Somebody had a whole house on their farm pretty close. I want to say like Tunbridge. And they had quite a few, illegal people that they were not providing like a reasonable place to live or a safe, comfortable place to live. But they weren't paying them.
Right. Yeah. And that's a huge problem. That's why, I don't mind undocumented immigrants coming here to work as long as people are paying them a fair wage for the work they are doing. And this is like one of those things that I should get some notes. I wish I had more time on my notes. Canada does really well, actually. So Canada sends, ambassador types that rep these individuals that represent the farmers up in Canada, and they go down to Mexico with these vouchers and then basically do sign up. They go out to these villages and towns and say, hey, we'll pay for, you have to go to Mexico City, catch this flight. We pay for the flight. We pay for your housing. We pay for your food. You come up, you work for 6 months, you get this wage, and then you go, and then we pay for your flight back.
That's amazing.
And then they even get an option to also like re-sign on for multiple seasons. And there also is a path to citizenship for these immigrants that volunteer for these farm programs.
That's amazing.
Yes.
So, all right. So that's sort of our social inequity. Is that?
I have one more, a little bit more. And this is the bigger part of the political aspect of this, is that ending policies that discriminate against farmers and ranchers of color, that includes like land tenure and support services. So at the turn of the century, almost 100 years ago now, there were 1 million black farmers in this country. There are now currently 45,000
out of an estimated 3.4 million farmers. So yes. that is a drastic.
Yep, and we've kind of touched on this before when I've mentioned the social inequities and social justice being looked for, especially when it comes like the EPA stuff and like things like the redlining of neighborhoods and stuff that prevented black neighborhoods. This was also prevalent in the farming community,
right?
And then also, like the banks wouldn't give black farmers loans, wouldn't allow them to get lease equipment and et cetera, and forcing them out of business. And yeah, it is just like that, just something that still needs to be addressed today because it is still going on in the ag industry and in our actual public policy.
Yeah. So I'm caught up with you in the article, and I'm seeing, you know, that 98%, I'm assuming, of farmland is owned by white farmers. And we've got this quote from John Wesley Boyd Jr., president of the National Black Farmers Association. Our members face enormous challenges, including a system that disproportionately leaves them behind. What I'm going through and looking for grants and things, I do see things for people of color and focused for them, but more than that, I see grants for female farmers and things like that than I do persons of color. And this is anecdotal. This is just my impression that I get when I'm looking at grants. I could be completely off base and just not looking in the right place because it doesn't apply to me.
Yeah, I keep bringing this up over and over, like things like the Global South, social inequities and social justice, and how a lot of the practices our country has come to rely on depends on the exploitation of a group of people.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this section here that kind of goes through, if as long as I'm not cutting you off here, but
Nope,
the benefits.
I've done my I've got on my, I'm on come I can come off my soapbox now.
Well, let's talk about the benefits that they've got listed here. It's just a little bit below that section of the article. Obviously, biodiversity, land, air, water. We want that richer plant, bird, and insect population.
Improved water detention, like we talked about with the no-till stuff, increased bacteria and fungi growth in that soil, which is making it a much more healthy biome.
Yeah, and then I'm seeing here in under our ecological benefits something that really chaps your ass sometimes, but the reduction in water pollution that is contributes to algae blooms because there's less chemicals that would be reduced.
And so much, again, so much of being what's done in regenerative practices has a cascading effect, which all ends up reducing the amount of pollutants, chemicals, and fertilizers making it into our waterways. And it's just like, yay, more people, I wish more people would do this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I like the personal and regional economic benefits here, cost saving. You're just not spending money on antibiotics, chemical fertilizers, herbicides. Everything is already present in your local system. You just have to use it. And then greater financial security because now you have diversified revenue streams. You have an apple orchard, you have pigs to slaughter, chicken eggs to sell. You have all of these extra things because the ecology of regenerative agriculture demands the diversity. And then the promotion of rural economic development, local employment, and healthier food choices. And this is where we start getting into my territory of community benefits.
Because yeah, you have the network of growers. I mean, networks of growers like sharing stuff, and that's one of the things I look forward to when I get my tomatoes, like my colorful tomatoes, and I have them sitting at your booth, and people are asking about, oh my God, that's a purple tomato, and I can be like, yeah, isn't it awesome? I can share some seeds with you, yeah, and
Yep.
yeah, kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's really fun. And I wouldn't be getting into some of the things I'm getting into right now if it wasn't for community involvement and getting to know these people. I have a strong feeling that if I wasn't getting to know the people at the Norwich Farmers Market and getting to know the people who run it and things like that, our application may have been overlooked. Because we're so brand new, but knowing these people and them knowing you, that's a huge step. But yeah, and then I like this because I still want to do it. I always see it over in Bradford. I can't remember the name of the farm off the top, but they have like the farm visit day thing, and there's this one over in Bradford. It's just flooded with people.
I mean, actually, if we want to talk about like farm visits that are going on right now, is the sugar houses are all
Oh,
having
yeah.
their visits, which is a big boom because it brings the community, and that's because a lot of the farmers around here also do maple sugaring as a side business.
Yep.
So it just brings the community in to see, like, hey, here's how we, and like a lot of the places are fun because they'll get like the old draft horses and sleds and
Yep.
actually like have fun with it.
Yeah, there's I mean every listserv I've looked at has been just filled with this, these experiences. And we see this in cider season. We see this and
Yeah,
also
cider season, we pumpkin season,
corn,
corn, strawberry.
strawberries. Yep. Oh, I'm almost out of my dried strawberries from last season. Megan made dried strawberry scones yesterday, so yeah, really good. But yeah, network of farmers markets. This is that stuck right out to me, right? Building strong relationships between consumers and their food. It's just they know exactly where it came from. I know exactly where my beef comes from. It's just like it's just all good, and I can't really think of a reason to say that regenerative agriculture is bad. I think resistance is because, people have to adjust what they've learned. But I don't know, to me, so much of it is intuitive. And
I mean, in a lot, another part, like in up here, you already see it being done, adopted much more readily than you do down where, I want to reference the other article you shared this week, about the farms being, the wheat producers.
Yeah, that was shocking.
Yeah, because I mean, it really comes down to the acreages has gone down some, but it's really there are just less small farms doing it and more large farms doing it, and a lot of it is that it's in the unwritten thing said in that article is that small farmers sold to large farms because they couldn't pull profit anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's too bad.
and that really leads me to my thought on the regenerative farming and why it's being resisted in the Midwest is because we've screwed the Corn Belt.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about with chemical inundation and things like that.
Exactly. The Corn Belt cannot function without chemical intervention.
Right. Well, and that gets to my point when I talked about that AP article at the beginning. Mm-hmm. This principle of agriculture only works if everybody's doing it. Mm-hmm. Which is the biggest challenge. I list challenges of re-education, and things like that. But if I'm doing it and there's a farm right next door to me that thinks that they have to increase the amount of pesticides that they use because I'm not using pesticides, then it's kind of pointless.
That practice is undoing the good that you're doing.
Right.
But then like that, the entomologist that's referenced in that APR article is like, yeah, we're tracking this specific fungus, this are a pest that is creating damaging the citrus crops,
right?
And they actually are finding that the organic farms that aren't using pesticides are hotbeds for this specific pest,
right? Oh, I have to look something up while we're doing stuff. But yeah, regenerative agriculture. Google it, look into it. Eric's going to be posting some of these articles that we've been talking about in the subreddit, and we just want to get that information out there. And if you have a question about what we've said, obviously it's easy to look this stuff up. We live in an age where that is, but you can always email us at brokenshovel802@gmail.
Or post on our Reddit.
Yes. Yes. I have to get used to saying that. Sorry. I'm logging into the website because I don't remember what my coupon code was that I made for this week.
So I think we can go to on the homestead, which we were all gung ho about spring last week.
Really were. So I've got a funny story. So I was all excited. I was like, "Oh, my earlies are doing my jalapeno earlies are doing really well. They're doing great, and they're getting really tall." And I finally the secondaries start coming in, and Meg's looking at them. She's like, "Come over here." I'm like, "Okay, what's up?" She's like, "These are tomatoes." I'm like, what? I had one tray, and and I'm like, are you like, how confident are you that these are tomatoes? She's like, I'm so confident that I'm telling you that I did this to you. So I had gone through and trimmed out everything that was short, which was the early jalapenos, and had let these tomatoes grow up. And then, so I just had to go through. I just cut out all of those. It's just 10. Not a big deal. But I just went through and cut everything out and replanted those jalapenos. And even if they are 2 weeks behind the rest, I'm still going to get fruit from those faster than any other of my pepper plants. But just one of those things. We just had the trays and the seeds out. We're both going, and I don't know. We're not really watching each other, and she just planted a row of tomatoes on top of my jalapenos. So,
nice. Nice.
Kind of funny. But the plants are all doing really well. I think it's
awesome. That won't hurt because tomatoes and peppers will do really well next week.
Yeah, but not in a starting tray.
No,
they're fine next to each other in the garden, but in a starting tray, one's going to survive and one's not. I showed you pictures yesterday of our American chestnuts that were growing from seed are coming up. We've got some that are like 3 and 4 inch. And then some other ones that are just breaking the surface, but it's really fun. I've never grown a tree from seed before. These were from the American Chestnut Society. They are a hybrid like our other trees, so they're blight resistant. But we hope someday to get a real American chestnut on our property and have it be well protected by the blight resistant American chestnuts. But one has to lead the other. Gosh, other than that, it's just we're counting down to chicken day. Meg is off for like a big chunk of the beginning of April, so we are we're just going to be working our butts off, hopefully, you know, doing stuff outside, getting ready. But yeah, other than that, around the homestead, it's mostly just moving snow. And
yeah, we got a lot of snow in a single day.
Yeah. Like I said, one of the local weather stations had said that we got 17 inches in my town, and I'm easily over 2 feet without a doubt.
I got about 18, 19 inches at my house. I measured this morning while shoveling.
Yeah.
And then speaking of shoveling and my PSA announcement to everyone. So this morning after I got cleared out, I completely cleared off my vehicle. Hood, roof, my cargo cover, all of it. Like, I got all the snow off and then went down the hill to the store to get milk and came down across a blind corner to where, and this blind corner also hits a downslope, and a gentleman had not cleared off the top of his vehicle. So as soon as he went down around that corner and hit his brakes on the downhill slope, half the snow that was on the top of his roof fell in front of his windshield, and he swerved and went off the road. Like, it was in a spot where he was able to get himself out because he wasn't that bad, but this could have been a very, very dangerous situation. And so I decided, after I got down to the gas station, he followed, but he came behind, and was then after I walked out, I'm like, oh, look, there he is. Oh, look, he didn't clear all the snow off. This is a great learning minute. So I took a picture of it and posted it on the Vermont subreddit.
Yeah, the comments are very interesting. I'm just taking a peek. Yeah.
I like the thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Or one person just said no. And it's just like, it's like, this is not like a, Come on, kids, do the right thing. This is like, no, this is a major hazard. It is both a risk to yourself and the drivers around you. If you are not clearing off your car fully, you are an idiot and you deserve to get ticketed and whatever happens to you.
Yes. Yeah. And where I'm looking for the one about the law in New Hampshire. Oh, I love that the guy who is being a jerk about it is being downvoted into oblivion.
One guy I blocked because I realized he had negative karma at a 3-year-old account. And was like,
oh my God.
Like, you blocked. And then the other one I just didn't engage with because it's just like the guy made that ridiculous comment about, well, at least it isn't as bad as the big flags. And I'm like, and my response was just like, hey, like, this is more of a PSA. Like, let's not make this political.
Yeah.
And his response, which is like, man, I hurt your feelings. Like, no, I'm just trying to be safe out here, people. Like this guy could have gone off the road and caused major harm to both himself and those around him.
I'm actually looking out the window. Meg is out there clearing off our car to get it ready. And how do you clear yours? Just
I have a brush. I have a telescoping brush because I have a nice big truck that I have to have something big and long.
We use a push broom. I've got a push broom. It reaches across the whole Forerunner, and then I stand up on the back gate, and I because we've got the ski rack on there, and I just push it all out from in between those rails, all down the front of the car, and then clear that off too. But yeah, it's not that hard. I remember, I have a vague memory. I must have been 7 or 8 years old. Was driving somewhere with someone, some adult person, and. Of course, I don't remember who they were, but I remember the name of the bridge, the Thaddeus Kosciuszko Bridge in, I believe it's in, Schenectady or Troy, New York. It's in that area. And back in those days, when I was 7 or 8, that was like the mid-80s, and everything was really boxy for these cars and stuff. And someone hadn't cleared their trunk off of their car. And it had been one of those situations where, you know, it froze in a block. And I remember, you know, we're going across this bridge, we're going over the river, and that whole block came as one piece and landed on our windshield. And we were like sliding and spinning, and it was, I mean, extremely dangerous. We could have gone right off the bridge and we, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, somebody posted a story on here about how, 10 years ago, someone was on the interstate and had a big chunk of ice fly off the SUV in front of them and smash through their windshield.
Yeah, it's terrifying. So, you know.
I tried to be nice about this, but with some of the comments I'm getting, I'm not being nice. This is no. You are being a danger. Anybody who doesn't do it and all the people defending them and acting all meh is no. I'm not having it. If I was a constable, I would be pulling people over left and freaking right and ticketing them. Because as a constable, you can do that. Wow. And guess what? Sharon's looking for a constable, and it doesn't require a law degree to be.
Oh.
They would like one, but it's not a requirement.
Okay. You could do that.
I've got my nice blue truck and no red light on there. I would be and the thing is I'm not a dick. I'm just trying to be safe where my kids and my family lives, where I'm trying to foster a community. And if you're going to be an idiot that's going to create hazards within my community, yeah, I'm potentially going to go after you.
Yeah. Well, talking about road safety, next week's episode. We're going to be talking a bit about the eclipse, the solar eclipse that's going to be happening across the country, basically from Texas to Maine. But it's going to be hitting us here in Vermont, and there's a lot of warnings and things that we'll get into it next week. But we're going to be talking about the eclipse and the environmental impact of tourism, especially here in Vermont. So I'm really looking forward to that. I do have a coupon code, as promised last episode. If you go to brokenshovel802.com, where our brooms are listed and soon to be more stuff, we're doing 10% off site wide to celebrate spring. Coupon code is spring24, all capital letters. I'm not sure if it actually matters, but spring. And then the numbers 2 and 4 to get 10% off your order on brokenshovel802.com.
And despite being the actual meteorological spring is April 1st, the actual physical equinoxial start of spring was this past was what last week.
Mm-hmm.
We live in Vermont, everyone.
Yeah,
spring does not come until May.
Well, you know, I'm just selling brooms here, friend.
Yes, you're selling brooms. I just want to remind everyone, all the people, I work with a number of people I work with, Cough Cough Delta, that made comments about how they it's spring's here, it's winter's over, and da da da. It's it's people that jinxed us on this storm.
Yeah.
Because winter's not done.
Did I make that prediction about the snow tires post?
Oh, you did. Yes, you did. I don't know if you did it on here or if you did it on in our text message. messages, but I know you did. You did make the call.
And within like somebody would post
on Reddit. There's been at least three now that I've seen.
Oh, really?
People like, all right, who took their snow tires off? And I'm like, and also, if you live in Vermont and you took your snow tires off in March, you're a special kind of stupid.
All right. Well, I should go help Meg finish clearing snow. Yeah. So come back next week. The eclipse. It's a hot topic.
It's a very hot topic. Yes. I will not start my ranting yet. Nice discussion about the issue. I'm not going to rant at all about some certain things that have been said.
Already. Oh, okay. All right. Folks, if you want to reach out to the show, brokenshovel802@gmail.com. Coupon
code. Check our Reddit r/brokenshovel802.
Yep. And take the snow off your cars, people. Seriously.
Yes.
All right. All right, Eric. Say goodbye.
Bye.